simplest restaurants. I knew which restaurants had booths and which had tables, and which ones that I didn't want to go to because I was worried, what if the hostess, as nice as they are, chose a booth for me and I would feel I couldn't fit in there or I'd be uncomfortable the whole time. So I really felt physically limited in a lot of ways from my weight. And it certainly excluded myself from a lot of activities too. Some new passions I have are scuba diving, and everybody's got a goal weight, right? I'm a few pounds away of being able to skydive, and that's like going to be a big deal for me. But and not just because I'm insane, but hopefully because just because it's something I couldn't do, right? Because they said you can't do it if you're over 250 pounds. This, nope, can't happen. And so just being told I can't do it, I guess, is a goal to go do it. But I didn't like to, you know, my boys like to go on the diving board at the big public pools and things, and they like to go on water slides. And I would just exclude myself from all of that because I just didn't feel good about it and comfortable about it. So I guess with comfort and thing, that leads into emotional for me. And when I think about emotional recovery for me, I was at 400 pounds, I was very angry. I was quick to anger, quick to resentments. I was a little shocked during my fourth step to burn up that much paper and pages, coming up with resentments. My sponsor at the time had me just write them out. Anybody, any place, anything that basically pissed you off, put it down. And I when I finished that kind of mantra, I smiled and thought, wow, no wonder I'm angry. Look at all that. And then to have to do the next step, right, and say, okay, what's my part? And I'm like, hey, not nice. What is that? What do you mean my part? So, but emotionally, I was just angry when I was in the food. I think that, you know, when I was at the, I was just very high and very low. When I think about, I guess, extremes of being an addict, of being high on sugar and flour and then coming down from it. I can imagine, and my kids remind me how fun I was to live with at that time, because I just, I guess like any other addiction, I was never happy in it, right? There was never enough. I was never pleased with eating. I was remorseful after I finished and when I had the kind of cloudy food hangover. I've learned that anger is often a fear process, and I've also learned just how much I was fearful about that I would exclude myself from even applying for certain jobs. I'm actually work for Hilton Hotels. It's been my career for 25 years, and I wouldn't apply for certain jobs because I would think, I wouldn't apply for certain jobs because I would think that job's for a skinny person. That job's for somebody prettier than me or stronger than me or what have you. And, I would, again, exclude myself from that. And, you know, never thought I could get the girl, never thought I could, just really be happy with things because I was so unhappy with myself. And I think that for years of failing diets, of one day, or I shouldn't say one day, you know, of being super excited about the new fad or the new diet, and then the super depression of failing at it and giving it up, that I sold myself and told myself then that, well, I failed at this diet. Clearly, I'm a failure. And I think I just lived for 30 years of my life convinced that I was overall was a failure. And I even remember walking into the OA rooms and people getting up and saying, "Oh, I'm a food addict." And I selfishly would think, "Well, I just eat too damn much. I'm not a food addict," you know. And I would judge and think. And this process, I've become very comfortable in the fact that I'm an addict. And what a beautiful thing it is for me personally to be an addict, not a bad person. That I have a disease and I have something that I have to deal with and I have to do steps and I have to manage it the best I can through those steps and through a lot of tools. And, you know, some people are blessed, right? They can have different food plans than me, or they don't have to weigh and measure their food. I mean, I can binge on almonds. I mean, like, whatever, right? Like, I can binge on good food too. So, it's personally what I have to do is kind of help put that in a box. Let's see. And I really felt, at over 400 pounds, I just really felt not worthy. Again, not worthy of the promotion, of the job, of being a dad. And what a beautiful thing it is now to, I guess what I should say, for me, it's an acceptable trade-off. Some people say, "Oh, you do all these steps," or "you go to meetings," or the people that don't understand us, right, they say, "Are you still always going to go to meetings?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm always going to go to meetings. That's me. I'm going to go to 3 a week because that's what I have to do." That to me is such an acceptable way to measure my food, calling some people, you know, having a sponsor. Those are acceptable things to finally liking myself for the first time in my life. That's okay. To be 140, 150 pounds down and have that kind of success where I never have, it's perfectly acceptable to me to come to meetings and to find that level of acceptance. I had a bit of a meltdown on my journey, if you will, where I, you know, maybe is it bariatric surgery? Is it this? Is it that? You know, I was just done. I was just absolutely done and worn out at my peak weight. And OA was suggested to me. And that has been such a blessing because I searched. I Googled it. I searched for long-term weight loss. You know, because it seemed like just such a machine. Other weight loss clinics or different programs, right? They flourish on repeat customers. And I just was sick of being a repeat customer. And so I remember the first meeting I went into in Phoenix and just praying that, you know, okay, God, I'm going to show up. That's the best I can do right now. I'm going to show up and I ask you to do the rest. And tell me what I'm supposed to do. And I sat down in the back, probably no surprise there. And first person to get up and share at the meeting talked about long-term recovery and talked about having 8+ years of abstinence and being admittedly in a body shape that seemed appropriate. And, you know, I did my best not to sob for the rest of the meeting. Because that's all I had asked for, was just to have people, that get me. Because God bless the people that can take a bite of something. I take a whatever, carton of something, right? I can't do that. And I just was surrounded by people that didn't understand that. So even though I'm the youngest in my OA groups and I'm male, which is rare, so it's I affectionately refer to the older ladies in my group. Many of them retired. That they're my people. Like, they understand, they get it, and they're fighting that same battle I am every day. The other thing that I think about that physically limited me was just even range of motion and doing things. One of my passions now is martial arts. And I think that helps twofold. One, physically, and two, emotionally. Because I don't know if it's, I don't know if violence is particularly a guy thing or what, but I love gearing up three times a week and stepping into the ring and fighting. It gets my adrenaline going, and it feels great to do something. I'm not a gym rat, and God bless you if you are. A staircase that goes to nowhere just doesn't do anything for me, right? I needed motivation that I could do, you know, and I needed a coach, if you will, just like I needed a coach for a food plan and a coach for abstinence. I needed a physical coach, and I would never work that hard. I guarantee you that if it was just me, you know, I go into the studio and wow, you know, they say, okay, we're going to do this and that. And it turns out to be, you know, 100 push-ups and 100 sit-ups and things. And never would I have done that by myself. But, you know, when you were just doing it, you know, and somebody's barking at you, you do it. So I guess I do my part by showing up, right? My battle's to walk to the door and walk through the door, and then God meets me and everything else. Another part of the emotional journey that I would share is that OA has helped me with my, I guess what I would call my disparaging voice. I had that voice during the failures of every diet that just said, you know, you're just, again, a bad person. You're not worthy of this. Why can't you do this simple thing and put down the fork? Other people, you know, have really big things to deal with. They're dealing with cancer. They're dealing with this and that. You can't even put down the fork. Thank you. And now I love that OA and God have provided me, I guess, kind of twofold with that disparaging voice. I'd say probably majority of the time I get to say, thank you for your input. I go fly a kite. And then the rest of the time I think I just bounce quicker. I think I've got people to talk to about it. I can pick up the phone. I go to a meeting, and I'm able to get up and share and say, hey, this is where I'm at. And I don't stay at that bottom. You know, I'm able to bounce much quicker. So I guess in closing, if there were some observations, I had a few thoughts about what's made a difference with me. The first is that I tried to do this myself for more than 30 years. I tried to figure it out. I tried to diet. I tried to lose weight. I tried to exercise. I tried to do all that. The difference for me has been all of you, has been being in these rooms and sharing and listening and learning and being able to walk it out with other people. I'd say my second observation is that as I mentioned with karate, I found something to do that moves my body that I love to do. Because I don't know about you, but I'm not good at doing stuff I hate, right? And if you hate the gym, then I just, my only suggestion for you, find something. Find something you like to do. Whatever that looks like that gets you out and gets you moving. The last observation I would say in closing is, and admittedly, I'm a work in progress clearly on this one, but I would recommend, or just something that's worked for me is in communication, in any kind of relationship, whether that's with my wife, with my boys, at work. I've seen this help me tremendously when I can remember to do it, is telling someone, whoever I'm in relationship, the story that I'm telling myself. So that when I'm talking to somebody and they tell me, whatever, you look good today, or I don't know, the sky's blue, whatever, I will tell myself and let my voice tell myself some story, right? That whatever I'm thinking at that time. So I think when I can remember to do it, I'm blessed to say, this is what I just heard. Is that what you were telling me? And especially with my spouse, it's usually off, you know, where she'll say, hey, you look nice today. And I'll go, I just heard that, thank you, that I should have worn something different. She'll be like, wow, where did that come from, right? I thought I just gave you a compliment, you know. So, but I used to live in that situation. I used to tell myself a story on anything, on what was going on in the world, what was going on at work, what was going on in any kind of relationship, family, friends, spouse. And I don't have to live in that anymore. I can ask the question, hey, is this is what I heard. Is that correct? And I can clarify that. And so I thank all of you for your support, and I wish you continued abstinence.
Thank you, Neil. Hi, my name is Holly. I'm a compulsive overeater. Can you hear me? Okay, I'm not used to, yeah. Don't start. Okay. Really grateful to be here. I want to thank Courtney for asking me to speak. And you know, when I'm asked to speak at 100 pounders anything, do you know there's no I'm not nervous a bit, because you know what? I'm a 100 pounder. I have this experience. I've worked really hard at recovering, and it's easy, right? I can tell you my experience, strength, and hope, because it's in here. It's in here. It's all around. So I'm glad that you're here. I hope there's lots of newcomers here, and if there are, I really welcome you. You're the most important people in the room, and I sincerely hope you're desperate and out of ideas, because that's how I came in. For the second time, desperate and out of ideas. I didn't know where else to go, so I came into the program and sat. That's all I could do. So I want to give you a little bit of a picture of what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. I brought my pictures, and I'll pass them around. I have pictures from, and my first memory of knowing that I was different and eating more than other people, I mean, if you can imagine, that was at age 4. And I have a picture of myself here at age 4 and all the way through. Could you pass those chairs? Thank you. I had never been at a healthy body weight my whole life. Age 4, you can see. Okay, the first communion, everybody's got that first communion picture. Well, from back east anyway. You can see I was never at a healthy body weight until I came here at age 46. So I spent the 46 years somewhere between, and mostly at 280 pounds, give or take. I never weighed myself more than that. And what would happen is what my pattern would be, would I 280 pounds, I was extremely uncomfortable, okay? That's when things started to hurt. My legs would hurt. I couldn't move around well. I would pick some diet. I would diet my way down to 240, and I felt so much better that I would stick there, and then I would go right back up. So my yo-yo was just that, like, 240, 280, and I did that for years and years and years. And then when I came into program, I came in for the second time, and this is the time that I was desperate and out of ideas. I came in August of 2002, probably close to 280, I'm sure, because I was as uncomfortable as I could. I can't even describe to you what it felt. I knew I had to do something. I knew I had to come back here. And my weight now has been for... let's see, I have 13 and a half years, so it took me about 2.5 years to get to a healthy body weight, or maybe 3 years. 140 pounds, so I'm 140 pounds down from my top weight. Yeah. And I am comfortable at this weight, and I maintain this weight through a sober eating food plan. I found the formula with the food that keeps me here. Now, that's this much of it, of the picture, but I have to eat to stay at a healthy body weight, and I found a very comfortable, sober food plan to do that, and that's a whole nother workshop. It's okay, but what I want to tell you is the big picture, and you know, right now I work with a sponsor. I work with an awesome. I have to put the adjective in there. I work with an awesome sponsor, and one thing that we do is we read books in the morning. We'll read together. In my time that I call her, I call her 4 days a week. And of course, we read when I'm not yapping too much. Sometimes I just talk through the whole thing, and we don't get to read. But right now, we went back to the big book, and we're in the middle of chapter 3. And as I'm, in the last 3 or 4 times we've read, I'm blown away. Now I read chapter 3 all the time. We read it at meetings, but I'm blown away just by reading it with her. Like we paragraph and we switch back and forth. We're on the phone. Just by doing that, it reminded me of so many things about what it was like, especially being a 100-pounder. A couple of things I wrote down I wanted to share with you because they're super important. It's going to sound like nothing, and it's absolutely not nothing. There's a part in here. It says, we do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Right. Try to drink and stop abruptly. All right? It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself. There's the honesty. Honest with yourself about it. Maybe worth a bad case of the jitters if you get full knowledge of your condition. I came in, when I grew up back east, and I stayed there. It was hard. I was there till I was 30, okay? So at one point, I was, it's hard to say a picture of 280 pounds rolling around. I was a diner cook. That's what I was. My father owned a diner restaurant, and he taught me. That's where I worked for 12 years after I went to college, and then I was a diner cook, okay? So there was diet programs in that little small town back east, and one of them, I'm sure very much like Weight Watchers, but in the beginning when it was just a really simple thing, and I know I went to it. I remember going to it. I remember that I want you to say, I'm 59 years old and I remember this, and I was in my 20s. The first week I went on this food plan that they handed me, okay, it was very simple. The first week I lost 10 pounds. They weigh you in. The second week I lost 5 pounds. The third week I lost 10 pounds, okay, that's 25 pounds in 3 weeks. And I just by following that food plan, whatever it was, I stuck to it like you wouldn't believe. And I lived by myself, okay? I just ate what that thing said. And I lost, that's how much I was eating. That's just by stopping that uncontrollable, all the time eating and eating what somebody else told me. Now, can you imagine the willpower that took? I had tons of willpower, tons of it. I could do that. And I started to walk. And then another instance is when I was here. I have a thousand stories, which I will not tell you. But when we read the big book, I remember things. The other thing was I was here. I moved out here when I was 30. So I was here somewhere. It's probably about 40, okay? I had the notion, I got into a really good relationship, finally. And we moved into an apartment, and I started to physically, and I remember the physically part, I really couldn't move around very well. That's the truth. I got really stiff. And it was really hard for me to navigate around. I have a profession that I'm moving around quite a bit, and I got really physically challenged. And I started going to the gym, and I went every morning, and to a point where I was afraid to stop going because I thought whatever little weight I lost and whatever, I got so obsessed with it because I was feeling better, and. That's part of my disease. See, it all centers in my head. It's nothing about physical. It all centers in my head. What brought me to these rooms is, I got into a relationship with a drug addict. I don't recommend that. don't do it. But I can tell you that probably at 35, that's the first person that paid any attention to me in my whole life, okay? So the filters are gone now. But anyway, luckily, thankfully, put me into another program, and I started to meet people because, I was isolated. I don't talk to – I'm very shy. You'd never know it now. And I don't talk to people, and I was very isolated. But that put me in with the nicest group of people, and I started talking. This is phenomenal, people. I started talking. I started to make friends. And sure enough, there was people in that program that were in OA, and I just followed them right in the rooms. But I didn't stay that time. That was 1993. I worked it. It was drive-by OA. And I sat in the rooms. I got a little bit of abstinence. I stopped eating all the time. I got a lot out of it, but I didn't stay because I wasn't working the steps. So what happened was I had to go out for 8 more years and run a catering company out of the house. Okay? You can laugh. It's okay. That's absurd. Thank you. But I had to do that to be completely demoralized and to come in and to feel like I had to feel to walk in here and start working. Okay? So I did that. And then summer of 2002, I'm not sure what happened. Probably not a lot. But what I was the same weight. I was probably 280 pounds. And I don't know. I felt horrible. I was done. I was done with everything. I could barely work. My relationship was, you know, sit and watch TV when we got home from work. I'd eat dinner, sit and watch TV, go to bed, get up, watch TV, go to work. That's all I was doing. I can't remember having any friends at that point. I started to go, like my attitude and my moods were horrible at that point. Nothing happened. It just was that way. And by the summer of 2002, I realized I had to do something. And OA came back into my head. And, you know, I didn't work it before. And I knew I had to give it a shot. I didn't know that it would work, but I knew I had to at least try because I didn't have any other ideas. I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't stand myself. So I came back in. And I started to say, I'm from San Fernando Valley. I went right back into 100 Pounders meeting, Monday Night Miracles. And I started to sit and watch and listen to people. And, Lonnie, you were speaking. I saw people like Ira and Carl. They were all there and I saw them from before. I knew them from before and they were still there. That impressed the heck out of me, that there were people 8 years later that were still there and still at a healthy body weight. Anyway, I started to come, and I got a sponsor, and I started to call my food in and talk to her September 28th, 2002. That's my first day of abstinence. It took me about a month of sitting, and that was cool. That was just fine. I was so glad to be somewhere. I was so glad to be sitting somewhere with people in a room. That's all I needed at that point. So I started to work the program with a sponsor who was working the program, who was right into the steps, okay? I got into writing assignments, and I did them. I called in my food. It was enormous. I did it anyway. One of my MOs was I would plan my food for the day, not after program, before program. I'd plan my food for the day. I'd pack it all up, pack my lunch. And by the time I'd go to work and by the time lunchtime came, I had added so many things as I stopped along the way. I had it was like double the size. This is my MO. I eat a lot of food. That's what I did. Anyway, so I followed my sponsor. I followed her, pretty much followed her food plan. She was a 100-pounder. It was easy. And worked the steps. I wanted to make sure I did a fourth step because I had so many things rolling around inside me by that time. And I did that. I wrote a fourth step. It was kind of the old style. There was a writing program from years ago called APOR, and it was that kind of a fourth step. It was kind of extensive. And I wrote it out, and I shared it with her. And then I went on to other sponsors and finished the steps. I had some tough ones. I had some tough personality ones. And, you know, I've probably had about 6 sponsors, and every one of them was exactly what I needed at the time. Some were shorter term, some were longer term, mostly longer, actually. I've had long-term sponsors. And I started to work, and, you know, she helped me with a food plan, my first sponsor. And obviously I had to be on a weight-losing food plan. I kind of got that. I was powerless. I'm powerless, and that's proven, All right. Proven. 46 years of being powerless. I had her help me with my food plan, and we were working. And the reason I was able to stay on this simple food plan that we started me out with was that I was working the steps. That's the difference. I was working steps. So I was able to stay on this food plan. So I'm losing weight kind of steadily, and life is starting to happen. I'm feeling things. Sometimes that's not so fun, but it's okay because now I'm sharing with somebody. Now I have people all around me. I'm surrounded by people in the program. My OA sisters, I was always in a, almost, sometimes not, but I was always in a sponsorship family that was close. Like we called each other. Now is phenomenal. My sister, we are so close, it's not funny. We're like, go away, sponsor. She goes away for 10, she just went away for 10 days. We had a blast because I know for me, I have to call somebody every day. I have to give my writing every day. So in this last 5 minutes, I want to share with you two things. One is the difference in what I learned from working the steps is that it's nothing about me. This isn't done by me. I had to learn that I couldn't do this. I've proven I couldn't do this. But what I do need is God, and that's what the steps have taught me. Through doing this, I built a relationship with God who started out just that guy who's flying in the air from the, you know, that's all I knew. Okay, you know, to a God now that's here inside and that I talk to constantly. It's like a friend. God is like a friend to me now, and it took, you know, it was very gradual. I heard you guys say, you know, I had this problem and God helped me. I'm like, really? That's so cool. And then what I realized was I was able to stay on this food plan. I was able to get better and better and better and feel better and be more in the world and talk more. Now you really can't shut me up half the time. But all this is God. It is nothing to do with me. I show up. I do what I'm told. And I work with a sponsor, and then, of course, the other part of it is I sponsor people. I pass this along. Pretty much the same way I'm sponsored, I pass it along. I work with some people that are, like, in different countries. I love that because then they come and visit. I see people here at the birthday party I work with that I don't see very often, and it's really cool. But my life has gotten so much bigger and so much better. My work ethic has changed tremendously. I almost got fired at some point a couple of years, well, not more than a couple of years ago. I have the same boss, but it's changed dramatically, and it's all through this gradual learning how to connect with God and keep, you know, not eating, not picking up. The food is no longer the solution. God is the solution. You guys are the solution. Everything other than food is the solution. Anytime I get to show up for life and talk to people, that's the solution. But really, it all comes down to God. And I want to tell you real quick kind of what I do every day. I get up super early in the morning to do my writing. I do writing. Perfect. I do writing. I do a God letter for the day. Like, what's in my head? Get it out on the paper. I read it to my sponsor when I call her. I take all my sponsee calls in the morning with the exception of two. I get ready for work. I go to work. I exercise. I started exercising really early, and that was my meditation. This was walking. I used to walk every day for like 45 minutes, and it was great. And I exercise. I do meditation. I work on whatever we're working on with my sponsor. Like I say, today, now we're going through the big book, and it's phenomenal. And I go to four meetings. Sometimes it's five meetings a week. Very blessed to be in the San Fernando Valley. There's lots of meetings. And, you know, I do outreach calls. I do everything I can, and I'm very open now. You know, my MO before was nothing. There was nothing, okay? And now that is not my story. I'm really, really glad to be here. Thank you for everybody being here. Thanks. Yeah.
I'm Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Okay. Thank you guys for sharing, and I'm so grateful to be here today. This is an amazing honor, and I'm really nervous, and I'm going to say that out loud so that I'm no longer nervous. I'm nervous because I have a hard time taking credit for my success in this program because it wasn't hard work. It wasn't like I had to run every day for like 5 hours and like sweat and like I didn't have to like starve myself. I didn't have to cut parts of my body off, you know, like I just worked this program. So I'm nervous because it was God. God did it. And I'm going to try to speak through God's word. So I'm so grateful to be here. I'll be celebrating 5 years at the end of February. So if I hang on. And my weight loss is a little over 200 pounds. Thank you. And that's like really embarrassing to share outside of OA meetings because like I used to weigh 400 pounds and that's like, it's not really something to brag about, but it is here, you know, like it's not like I'm like taking credit for it, but like I used to be really, really fat. Like you want to be my best friend, you know? Anyway, so I've found my family in this program. I found the best friends ever. I have my sponsor here and my sponsee, and I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. So let's see. I've been a fat kid my entire life. I grew up in New Jersey, and I'm Italian and Jewish. So, yeah, I don't really have to say anything after that, you know. So, like, I was always like, it was like one side was, Jackie, stop eating, that's too much, or you're not eating enough, you know. So it was, and then like I was guilty for everything I did, and I never did anything right. So it was a tough childhood. I just remember also just never feeling like I fit in, and I don't think it really was my weight at first. I just felt like I came into this world and didn't have a manual. I was dropped here by some like UFO from another planet, and like they forgot to give me like a guide or a map on how to be a human like in this world. And I, you know, managed well through school because of food. I had food. That was like my thing. I love to eat. I love to steal food from my friends, you know, they're at their house, and I was never fed enough. And I when I was sad, I ate. When I was happy, I ate. When I was lonely, I ate. When my parents were fighting, I ate. When I, you know, was teased in school for my weight, I went home and I ate. And like, that was my solution. And I'm grateful for that because I don't know if I'd be alive today if I didn't have my coping mechanism, which was food. And, so let's see. I was teased a lot for being overweight, and being an overweight child is the worst. And I feel like bullying is like a lot worse these days. And like, I am so glad I'm not in high school right now. It's the worst. And like, I would blame other people for my problems, never took accountability for anything. And I went to see my first nutritionist when I was 8 years old. And I probably could have like leveled out by like the time I was like 10 or 11 because I was an overweight child, but my parents were so focused on my weight that it was a problem, and they wanted to find a solution. And like through this program, I realized that like it was my weight, but like I just never really got what I needed for my family. And like, I don't blame them for that, but, they just didn't know how to handle an overweight child. And that was the issue. And so I went to the nutritionist and she told me like, this is what you eat. This is what you can't eat. So like, I already felt like I was really different. And this lady was telling me I had to be even more different than everyone else in school. And I'd have to bring lunches to school. And I had like really gross turkey sandwiches on like wheat bread with no like any sauce on it. And like carrot sticks and with no ranch. And then these... like who, you know, and then the kids, my peers would be eating like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with like, gushers and something like awesome. And I always felt envious. I was always like, why can't I have what you have? Like, why do I have to be different? And like, that is literally like my life before program. It was up until I'm 29 years old. I was 25 when I came into this program. And, I just always felt like I was like, deprived. I was always deprived. So I just needed food all the time. So it progressed slowly, but surely I gained a lot of weight, and I was in and out of like program, like weight loss programs, like Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig. I even went to fat camp twice. It was great. Like, you don't have to do anything. You just listen to them and eat what they give you. And I lost like 50 pounds and it was awesome. But I was also like, I have a drug and alcohol problem and I was smoking pot the whole time I was there. So that really wasn't, I wasn't really learning anything because I was high the whole time. So yeah. Anyway, I have no filter. I'm so sorry. Like, it's whatever. I try to be myself today, and that's all I get to be, so thank you. Anyway, those things work temporarily. You know, they'd work for, like, a month, and they'd work, you know, for maybe 2 months, and I would just get hungry. I would feel deprived more, and I want more and more and more. And so I'd always gain all the weight back plus, like, 100 more pounds, you know? And I started having emotional problems in college. And like I said, I was involved in drugs and alcohol. And like, that was like a great solution. Like it was, but I was like, but people, I used to take Adderall and like, I was also did cocaine and like, people were like, you're so fat. How are you doing Adderall? And like, I literally was the only person in the world who was still hungry on like speed. So it like really nothing stopped me from overeating. Nothing. I tried like hypnotism. I tried therapies. I had a life coach. I had personal trainers. I had, you know, like my parents wanted me to be happy and they thought by making me smaller, it would make me happier. And that's what I thought, you know, I didn't know anything else. I didn't know that it was an inside job until I came to this program. So I went to college and I, you know, went a little crazy and had some fun, you know. I went back to the fat camp again in my junior year of college. I lost a lot of weight and got a lot of attention from boys. And that was cool because growing up, I was always the friend. I was never, the girlfriend. I was always like, oh, you know, guys were always like, you're such a great friend. You know, like, I'm so glad you understand me. And then like, they'd want nothing to do with me after that. And like, my self-esteem was just beaten down slowly through my childhood, through middle, like my, teenhood. And then into like, adulthood. I don't really think it was adulthood because I don't think I was an adult until I came to this program. I still don't think I'm an adult sometimes, but, let's see. I, graduated college somehow. I'm pretty sure the speed helped with that one. And I basically just continued to not live a life. I mean, I just did what my parents wanted me to do, was graduate college. Got a job out of college working at a newspaper company doing sales. And if you're like are a compulsive overeater like me who takes everything personally, do not go into sales like that. It was horrible because I made everything about me. And I was when someone said no or when someone said your newspaper sucks, I would take it internally and I would go home and I would binge because I felt so horrible and I took it on myself. And like, my life basically turned into, that job got in the way of my overeating and binging. So I quit because who needs a job, you know, like I didn't, cause I'm different than everybody else and gravity and normal rules don't apply to me. So, I lived in a very nice apartment in the East Coast and I had no job and my eating started to take on another form. I would binge and then graze in between meals. So I never really stopped eating. I would continue. And, I was talking at lunch to some people about our little games that we play, when ordering food, like over the phone or like when the pizza guy would come with 7 pizzas, I'd be like, hey guys, the pizza's here. And no one would be in my apartment and going through the drive through and asking for more than one drink because if I'm going to get 7 meals, I have to get like at least 3 other drinks, not one, because then they'll know it's like for one person. And going to the grocery store and pretending to have parties and all of that. And it just like these, I would go to any lengths to have my food and to get what I wanted. And like, I can't even tell you how much money I spent on my binge food and, clothing to make me feel better, or bigger sizes or doctors or psychiatrist. I can't tell you how many medications I've been on to fix this problem. And, I went in and out of psych hospitals because I was crazy and messing with my medication. Thank you. Wow, it's already been 10 minutes. Wow, okay. And I finally reached a bottom when I was at my living alone, and I would be afraid to leave my house. My life was very marginalized. I was 400 pounds. I felt like everyone was looking at me. I couldn't really wear normal clothes. Yoga pants were like my best friend. I was tired of shopping at Lane Bryant and Torrid and other, you know, plus size clothing. I didn't want to be a plus size girl anymore. And apparently I had a heart attack and didn't know I had one until I got my heart checked out 2 years ago. And the doctor said, it looks like you've had a heart attack before. And I was 20, maybe 24, 23 when that happened. And it was probably from walking up my flight of stairs to my apartment. Cause that was like my path, you know, like to the grocery store or to McDonald's or whatever, you know, binge places. And I would try to stop my overeating by throwing things in the garbage can and pouring water over it and then I go back in the garbage and take it out, and because I could not stop myself. I was out of control. And I was so depressed that I decided to go to rehab for drugs and alcohol and did not want to discuss my food. I'm like, you can take away my drugs and alcohol, but I don't want to talk about my food. My food is the only thing that I have, and it has gotten me this far. And I'm just going to be fat for the rest of my life. That was what I decided. And through a series of events, I was brought to my first OA meeting, and I did not want to be there. I was like, you guys are worshiping this weird higher power thing. Like, I am Jewish, but like, please, like, I don't ask anything else of me. Like, I can't, if you're going to say like anything religious, I can't be involved in this. And, then I gave them my phone number, and they called me relentlessly over and over again while I was trying to binge on my food when I left. And that was a huge mistake. But for something was planted in my brain. It was basically like, I'm not alone, you know, like I've actually heard some things that I related to, and someone else had shared that they ate out of a garbage can. And then someone else just shared that they tried to get gastric bypass surgery, but they were turned down because of their mental illness. And that's what happened with me. And, I'm like, well, maybe this is like what I could try, you know, like what would hurt trying? And then I just decided to give up my will, and like that's how I lost 200 pounds. It wasn't because of what I ate, or you know, I did eat significantly smaller, you know, but it was because I decided that what I've been taught or what I thought I knew was completely wrong. Everything that I was taught from whatever first memory I have to age 25 was completely wrong about who I was, or about what I knew, or about what reality was. Like, my life was turned upside down, and it needed to be turned upside down. I started working the steps. I got a sponsor. My first 100 pounds were really easy to lose, because when you go from eating 24/7 to eating three times a day, and especially when you're that heavy, it was very easy for me to lose 100 pounds. But then the second 100 was pretty hard. I had to continue to like reduce my meal, and so because of that, I had to work harder on this stuff in my brain and the stuff in my heart. Because after losing all the weight and being at my goal weight, I still felt like I weighed 400 pounds. I still at times feel like my ego and my like lack of self-esteem gets in the way of me achieving goals and like doing cool things and like having relationships. And I had, because of all the weight I lost, I had gotten surgery on my stomach to remove the extra skin. And I went into the surgery wishing and hoping, and you know, this is going to fix everything for me, you guys. Like, this will fix it. I will feel better about my body. I will feel better about my life or where it is. So I went and got the surgery, and I had like a spiritual experience, and I came out of the surgery and had so much support from all my OA people. And I realized that like going into the surgery, I thought it would fix how I felt about my body, but what it did was make me not care about my body and realize that like what what matters is me on the inside. And like, my weight never mattered. It only mattered to me. And I had a newfound freedom, basically. I could be myself. I could walk among the world and keep my head up high and say hello to people, look them in the eye. And then my weight slowly started to come down some more and more and more. And then I just didn't care how much I weighed. I didn't care that I went from a size 28 to a 12. I didn't care that I get to shop like wherever I really want to, you know, like that stuff is like this important to me. What's important to me today is that I don't have to be on medication to function in life. I don't have to drink or do drugs to like be a human being and to be the silly Jackie that I get to be. Like, I don't need to be sorry for myself or who I am. I don't need to worry about what you're thinking about me or what you're thinking about me. I am just living my life and doing what I want to do. And I want to be alive today. And that is like a huge thing for me too, because I didn't know why I was here. I thought that I was supposed to have died when I was like 20 or something, and I cheated death and something was wrong in like the universe, and I wasn't supposed to be here. And that is not the life that I live today. And thank God, and I have a relationship with God. And how much time do we have? Sorry. Okay, perfect. I have a relationship with higher power today, and it gets tested on a daily basis because I get into my will, into my ego, and I think I know better than God, and I doubt what I have is right for me. And I just want to end on this story I love to tell. My grandfather passed away a couple months ago. And it was very sad. He was sick, but it was, death is always heartbreaking. And I drove to say goodbye to him. He lived in Palm Springs, and I was driving home from visiting him, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs, like, fuck, you know, like, you know, explicit here, explicit, explicit, like, I hate you, God. Like, why are you letting this happen to my family? How am I supposed to handle this? How am I supposed to handle this without overeating? How am I supposed to handle this without fill in the blank, whatever issue I would, I would put anything to fill in that God-sized hole. How am I supposed to do this? How am I supposed to be strong, you know? And I was driving, and I looked up, and I saw, like, half a rainbow to the right of me. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I haven't seen a rainbow in so long. And then I kept driving, and I saw the other part of the rainbow on the other side. And then I kept driving, and I drove under seven rainbows, one after another, and I sobbed, and I sobbed. And I was like, no matter what, God is always there for me. And it makes me emotional because I felt so alone and so lost my whole life. And I don't care how much I weigh or what I look like or what I wear. I am happy today, and I'm not alone. And if you're new and you're confused, and if you're, you know, have no idea what's going on or why this lady up here is crying, just I just call myself a lady. I'm so old. God. I just like, just stay. I promise you, it is so important, and your life will be amazing and big. And if you got, I have pictures, but I left them at home with my cat. So I have my phone. If you want to come see me after the meeting, I'll show you too. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jackie. Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question? Yes. Yes, the question is that I mentioned I was adding more food to my, specifically to my lunches, and that was, help me. Well, that was before recovery.
Yeah, so
yes.
You were still manipulating and trying to be in control, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's all.
Oh. That was a yes or no answer. Okay. Yes. I was still trying to be in control. Who else would like to ask a question? Yes, Roz.
Okay, so Roz's question was, do I do any prayer and meditation in the morning before I go to work? Okay. Yes, I always, should I stand up? Does it matter? Okay. No. Okay. I read, I have, okay, when I first got sober and abstinent, I used to read the morning meditation in the big book, and it got me centered and reminded me that, like, God is in control of my life today, and I am not. I'm just a participant. I'm not the controller. And I started doing that again about a month ago, and it's been very helpful to remind me of that. So that's what I do.
Next question. Okay. Prayer and meditation. I'm Holly. And I won't call, I'm sorry, I called people by name and I'm just used to doing that. I won't do that because it's being recorded. Yes, I do prayer and meditation each morning. I read three meditation books. I say set prayers, the third step prayer specifically, the serenity prayer and the seven step prayer. And then I do any number of two or three different forms of meditation. And that is before, that's right after I get up. I do that before I take calls or get ready for work or anything.
Hi there. I guess the way I would answer that is when I remember to. I definitely pray every day about it, but as far as my God time and that real connection, I have to focus on that. Maybe like any other addict, it's something that, I was real gung-ho with, and then I slipped a bit and come back. So that's been a roller coaster that I really have to focus on, because I know my days are better when I do, and I know that things are easier and slide off easier when I start my day centered like that. But just being honest, there's times I certainly don't.
Thanks. Yes. The question is, how do we maintain momentum since it took a long time, since it took a while to lose weight?
For me, it didn't take that long for me to lose my weight. It took me like 3 years, maybe, and my goal wasn't to be this size, it was just to be like, not crazy. So I just follow my meal plan, you know, and then the weight came after that. So that's how I kept the momentum, was because I wanted to have a life that was meaningful and spiritual and not like consumed with myself. And that's how it continued on for me. But like right now I'm like maintaining, and there's been like a period of time, like of a year where my weight would stay the same. And that's just how it goes. And like the nature of this program is like, your weight will go where it goes, like the way it's supposed to go, you know?
For me, I didn't mention this, but when I did come into OA and start working the steps or start working the program or just came in and sat, I had no clue that I would ever be a healthy body weight. It wasn't even in my stream of consciousness. I had only been down to 200 pounds at one point when I, some diet, I did get down to 200, bounced right back up. But I didn't know that I would ever be a healthy body weight. I just needed to be somewhere, if that makes any sense. So the momentum was that as this was happening, and it took me about, like I say, 2.5 to 3 years to get to a healthy body weight, I started feeling better and better and better, and I felt more alive. And this day by day, I would feel more alive, and I'd be more in the world, and I could feel, I mean, my sponsor tells me now, you know, and she reminds me, we are love. There's nothing else. We are love. And I never would have known that had I not gotten to this point. So that it went from being completely dead inside to that. So that's the momentum, and that's what helped me keep doing this program.
So with motivation and how to keep going over a long period of time, needing to lose, for me, 150 pounds, a couple things that I would share. One, I think my sponsor, under a lot of wisdom, again, my sponsor is my sponsor, so I don't know if everybody does the same thing or not, but he made sure that I only weighed myself twice a month. because that was a I'm manic about the scale, and that was a really big demotivator for me. So to be able to only do that twice a month, although admittedly it pissed me off for 14 days, right, until I could get on it again. It helped me. It helped me to not lose my motivation because that number was moving, even if it was moving slowly. Also shopping in my closet, for lack of a better term, being able to, you know, move back to those clothes that I hadn't been in and hadn't been in and hadn't been in and was positive I would never get back into. I mean, being able to hit some of those little things, was little motivation, made me feel good. And honestly, these meetings, and being able to share, little successes, made me feel good. Avoiding a binge, avoiding, I mean, I run hotels for a living. I always laugh when my family says, "Oh, we're going to eat pie in the other room." I was like, "Do you realize the amount of food that comes through my hotel? Like, I manage gourmet chefs. Like, I could eat 24 hours a day. So, like, there's food everywhere." So being able to avoid that and share that at a meeting, that was motivating to me, to be able to just go and say, "Hey, I thought of something you said today that we don't eat no matter what, and I avoided this and that." And that's some of the things that helped me stay motivated.
Oh, yes, right. The question is, how do we deal with the fact that we have to get up earlier and earlier, or earlier, to do the morning meditation before work? You want to go first?
Sure. For me, I learned that doing things like 15 times, or, like, it starts to become a habit. And that, like, you train yourself and you just do it. It's like brushing your teeth. Like, I did not brush my teeth before this program. And, like, I had to do it, like, repetitively every day. And after, like, 15 or 20 times, it's like I got into the habit of doing it. So I could not leave my house unless I brushed my teeth. And so, like, I could not, because I've done it over and over again for about a month, I can't leave my house unless I do my morning meditation.
For me, I'm an early riser anyway, but it wasn't quite that early. But what I realized is I would just back it up 5 minutes, back it up 10 minutes. And now that I have more sponsees than I did, of course, in the beginning, but I take my first sponsee call at 6, and I have to be ready for work. I'm ready for work. You know, I'm dressed, and the dogs are in and out, and then I go on from there. So I had to back the time up of getting up, and it was just like my natural time clock now. I get up early, but I'm at 4:15 now. It just, that's the way it is. And, but I go to bed by 10. Like, when I go to my night meetings, don't pass this along, but I'm like, you know, I go to bed early by 10, but I just had to keep backing it up. But you're right, you have to have that time. There's no other way to do it.
I mean, I would echo a lot of what's been said. Somebody rocked me a little earlier today, and I guess I would just share that because of how that hit me. And he was speaking about honesty, and he shared that, to your question specifically, I don't have time for it. I've certainly told myself that before, but I think if I'm really honest, that's not the complete truth, right? That's not the total statement. What I'm really saying is I either don't want to do it, or I think I don't have to do it, and I'm trying to get out of it then. So when I'm honest, then I make time for it.
Who's next? Yes. The question is, how are we willing to let go of the foods that were bothering us and getting in the way of God, and stop grazing, all the behaviors that are behaviors?
That's a really great question. Thank you. for my meal plan, I don't really cut anything out, but I, there's certain things that I've learned in my meals that I can't have in my home. And like, but for like the grazing and overeating, binging things, I've replaced that. Those were tools for me. So I replaced it with different tools because I still like, I'm still crazy, you know, so I need different tools that are more helpful. So I replaced it with picking up the phone, making outreach calls, calling sponsors or anyone, and writing, journaling. Sometimes I dance around my apartment in my underwear and like that makes it better.
I agree. That was a really good question. You know, that's for me, I had, number one, I knew I could only eat three meals a day because I was literally eating all the time. So three meals a day came very easily, not easily to do it, easily to know I had to do it. I had to cut out the sugar. In fact, I did that even before program. I was eating so much I was making myself sick. So my abstinence is three meals a day and no sugar. But the things that I had to let go of, I knew fried stuff. Come on, really? Come on. That had to go. But then, again, we're just working the steps. The next thing would come up. I would have to, we talk about it. And it's a matter of being honest with myself. Talk about it. You know what? I can't do that combination anymore. I can't do that behavior anymore. I can't do that food anymore. Let it go. But they were one by one. The cream and the coffee story is hysterical. If you want to hear it after, I'll tell you. Yeah. But yeah, the cream and the coffee had to go, man. You know, glug, 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 glug. It had to go. And then one by one, these things got Diet Coke. Oh, my God. I had to let go of Diet Coke. I was slugging down two at a time when I was newly abstinent. It goes when it goes, you know. God's in charge.
Again, good question. Similar to what's been spoken, I had to manage to three meals a day and know that I couldn't eat in between those. I have a lot of comfort in some. My sponsor tells me a lot that I can eat anything. I choose not to today, and I guess I broke it down to just smaller things. I choose not to eat that right now. You know, that one thing. If I think about I'm never going to have another cookie, I'll freak out. Right, like my head. I'll just say, I'm not normal, and this isn't normal, and other normal people can do that. I'll tell myself a whole host of stories versus just saying, you know what? I can eat a cookie. Like, there's going to be repercussions for that, but I can. I'm choosing to avoid that right now. I personally needed to excommunicate myself from sugar and flour, and it was and no lie, it was hard. I went through withdrawals, and my wife could probably attest that was probably fun to live with for a couple weeks, and headaches and things. And I truly went through an addiction withdrawal. But once you're past that, it got easier. And similar to what Jagger was saying, I had to come up with new coping mechanisms. A good friend of mine says nothing good ever happens after midnight. And, you know, sometimes when I can't figure anything else, I go to bed. You know, when I'm having that night that I'm like, I want to eat everything, or I'm trying to white knuckle it because I'm not probably where I need to be spiritually, then I sleep helps often because I find that's a trigger for me. Lack of sleep can be a trigger to want to eat. And then also physical exertion. I fight and I get to, you know, I guess I pity the person that I'm sparring with in karate because I'm like, yeah, I don't get a cookie today, right? You know, so, but... I guess that's channeling it, so it works for me.
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that for me also, having the faith that any bad feeling or good feeling is always going to pass. It takes like maybe like 4 to 5 minutes. It always passes. And it's sad that the good ones do too, but that's what I have to remind myself of too.
Who's next? Yes.
Hi, Jody from Holton Theater. How did you all handle the attention that you got from your friends or the opposite sex? The attention that you might have never had before, how did you handle people who came to you so differently than what you
The question is, how did we handle the attention that comes with being a completely different body size, right? From the opposite sex or from anybody, I guess.
Sure. Well, my sponsor's right there. What I say is thank you so much. I've worked really hard and that's it. I don't have to explain myself or anything. I don't have to go into anything else about it, you know. And it's like I said from when I first shared, it's hard for me to take credit for it. But like when I say that, people are usually like, well, cool, you know. And I don't, and because sometimes I'll float into like, well, I must have looked like a really big piece of crap before, you know. But with the opposite sex, I struggle with that so much. I get a lot more attention than I used to, and it's been pretty hard to handle. And I've gone to the other program to get help for it, for that one. So
thanks. It's a really big deal, and it affected me. The attention affected me in the beginning when I was kind of new. It's a little hard to deal with. It was hard to deal with for me. People just blurt stuff out. Like, I used to work in a 3-story office building, and people would yell down from the top floor, "Hey, Holly, looking good." And my head wants to blow right off, you know? But it really does wear down after time. People never say, sometimes people comment, "Oh, good, you're still keeping your weight off." But they do. Especially my family, because I go back east and see them, they see me once a year, and I see them looking at me when I'm coming off the plane. They're like, "Is she still?" You know, but it is hard to deal with, and I'm. It's something that has to be walked through with God. You just got to walk through. That's all. Thanks.
I would echo that the attention has been hard. I am still one of those people. If somebody's looking at me, then I look behind, right? Who else are they looking at? I guess one coping mechanism I've used for it is just to simply stop and try to hear it and say thank you, because I have spent a life not hearing that, and allowing myself to not hear that. I also love killing a conversation with OA when people come up and they want an easy answer and they're hoping to hear Atkins or something like, "How are you doing it?" And I love to go, "I am in a 12-step program to deal with my food addiction." And they go, "Wow, okay." And they have no idea what to say after that. So I get a kick out of that. But yeah, I guess that's it. Thanks.
Okay. We're just about out of time. Thank you to our timer and to all you for participating in this panel discussion. After the Serenity Prayer, would everyone please clear the room, as depending upon the timing, there may be another panel discussion right behind us. Thank you for allowing us to be of service, and let's hold hands and say the Serenity Prayer. Someone throw my pictures up.
Change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.